Welcome to Joiners, the podcast with Tim and Danny, where we explore the world of hospitality by chatting with its most colorful characters.
That's right, Danny.
What's up?
Long day.
It's been a long one.
Doubleheader.
Long day at the office.
Two interviews.
It's like a real 9 to 5 over here.
9 to 5. It is. It's only 3 p.m. for Pete's sake. Well, Danny, over the weekend, I posted a question on our Instagram stories asking for dining conundrums and faux pas from our followers.
The social media masses.
Yeah. And I don't know if you were able to review them.
I saw a few of them. Pretty good.
Because I did want to discuss a few of them. I picked three that I think we could kind of discuss. First one from John Lou One. He said, asking the server what he or she would recommend. They don't know your tastes.
So good.
I think that makes sense.
That's one of the best ones.
But I do it.
We all do it. But it does make perfect sense. Like, you might be someone that hates cilantro, let's say.
Shannon.
And then the server recommends something with cilantro, you get it, you're like, what the heck? I didn't know there was cilantro in this.
Well, no, because that's the first thing Shannon says when we sit down.
It's, is there cilantro in this?
It's always, are there any allergies that we should be aware of? And she's like, just an aversion to cilantro.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. And I remember Juan Kim, during his episode, he was like, he's like, I hate when people, I think we were still asking the question. He's like, I don't know what you like.
Yeah, and it's so true.
Yeah. All right, next one was from Nate Tryman. Says, really can't stand flash photography.
Yeah, it's distracting.
I'm completely on board with that. I hate the flash photography.
I mean, I can't imagine anyone enjoys it other than the person taking the flash photo.
I don't think they enjoy it. They couldn't
even
possibly.
They don't enjoy it, yeah.
So pretty recently, we were at a brewery for Shannon's coworker had a birthday party at a brewery, and one of the women who works for the company, well, there's like, we were at a dog-friendly brewery. In like tap room or whatever, and there was a man and his adult son sitting at a table with their dog, and the dog was sitting in the booth with them. They're like sitting in the corner, and the dog was in kind of the crotch of the table, and then the man was probably, I mean, the son was probably like 25, so the dad was, you know, 50s. That so you can picture him. And one of the women from our party went over and took a picture of them. Because it was a fun sight, but the flash went off, and she definitely wasn't expecting the flash to go off.
Yeah.
And then it turned into her like going over there and actually sitting with them and talking to them, they're very nice. But I was like dying laughing. I'm like, I'd probably have to kill myself if I did that
brutal.
Of embarrassment. That was, but yeah, I mean the photos. You know, they say camera eats first. I'm kind of a. I'm against that.
I
get that because I like to take pictures and, you know, post about places that we visit, or especially they've been on the pod. But you got to keep that flash off. That's my nightmare. And then here's one from Sush Maker. That's how I'm going to pronounce that. It says, stacking dirty plates, helpful or not? I find it appropriate at some places, or just avoid in general.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, maybe it depends on the place. I think if you can really consolidate properly, then go for stacking.
Oh, but there's a like, method to the madness.
There is. Like, don't stack a plate on top of a plate that has, like, silverware on it. Like, clear that silverware out, make a clean stack.
Are you a stacker?
And put the silverware on top. I mean, it really depends, I guess. But sometimes, I'll try to be helpful, but you don't want to like create a stack that's going to like topple over if a busser tries to clear it or a server tries to clear it.
Yes.
And that's the problem. Like, people don't know like the stacking etiquette. So they'll just like make a big pile and make a crazy high precarious stack. That's not helpful. Cause then someone has to take all this stuff apart and then restack it up.
I am
and
a
that
stacker.
Takes more time at the table.
I'm a stacker. I do it pretty obsessively. Cause I like to create space.
Yeah.
Especially when we order, if you're at a restaurant where you have to order everything at once, I'm always like nervous then because I'm like, do we have room for everything at once?
Yeah.
And then I'm always like, if we're finishing something, I'm consolidating. I'm like, I'm putting, you know, if we have one croquette left, I'm putting that on a plate with something else. And then, and I'm stacking. But etiquette is you put the silverware and napkins on the top plate and everything else. You should only stack on top of an empty plate.
Exactly.
That's etiquette.
And people don't do that.
But also, you could have your plates taken too soon.
Yeah.
How many times has that happened? And that's infuriating.
That is brutal. I also, it sucks like if both of us are eating and you finish your, let's say, appetizer first and then yours gets like cleared away and then like I'm just sitting eating. It's like just kind of awkward.
Are
I feel
you,
like things
you
should
also,
be cleared together.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
Do you?
Because then there's like a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah. How about when everybody's food comes except for one person?
Yeah. I think you got to eat when it's hot.
You got to eat when it's hot.
Yeah.
I think that final, crazy. Yeah. Final line on that one.
Yeah. Eat while I don't it's hot. Want, if my food is the food that hasn't gotten there, I do not want the whole table waiting on me.
True.
Same. I want them to enjoy their food.
And also,
don't even think about me.
Yeah. And the people who are like, well, I don't have mine yet. Shut up. Shut yeah, the fuck
that's
up.
Insane.
Like, what are you, crazy? Like, I'm going to ruin your meal because the kitchen forgot yeah, about mine.
That's very cool.
You know what I'll do? I'll say, you know what? Behavior. You can have some yeah. of mine. Yeah. If you need to have
you
food in front of you.
Take one pee off your plate yeah. and just place the single pee.
I'm happy to share, but you better give me a bite when yours comes out, which does not constitute a tyranny split. All right, that's enough of that.
All right.
We got a good one for you this week.
Yeah, real fun to have Alfredo with us in the studio.
Out of towner.
Yeah, Alfredo Nogueira. Or his dad likes to say Nogueira, but it's really
what
Nogueira.
Did he say? Nogueira in the river?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we had Alfredo Nogueira on here, and, you know, we knew him from Chicago since he was at Analog for a long time, one of our favorite places.
Yeah, it was a short-lived but very impactful restaurant.
Yeah, like a cult status sort of place.
And not even a restaurant. I mean, it was a cocktail bar with a really good food program.
Yeah, and, since Alfredo's moved back to where he's from, New Orleans, and he's continuing to kill it there. He's doing all the places at Cure Co. So that's Cure, Cane and Table, and Val's. Mm-hmm. So he's running kind of like all the culinary side.
But don't worry, we talk a lot about his time in Chicago.
Yeah, we sure
how
do.
He got here, which I had no idea, and his return back home. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation
with Alfredo Nogueira. Tim's going to start beatboxing for us.
I never stopped beatboxing.
So you're in town for us for a hot minute.
I'm on my way back after this. But it was just you. A baby shower.
Okay.
Yeah, we still have Casey Key. You remember Casey worked all over the scene and now owns, he has a sandwich shop. Oh, shit. What the hell is it called? Wyler Road.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Wyler. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we're all very tight, and his partner and my wife are best friends.
So. Do they come to New Orleans?
Sure. Yeah. That's the thing about New Orleans. Everybody likes to come.
That is a great place to visit.
Oh, yeah.
It's except crazy. For during Mardi Gras.
I like it.
No one visits that then, right?
I had some, a lot of people come. It's always, you know, like, what's up?
Yeah, is it like a pain in the ass when people come to visit? Especially
I wouldn't
during
say that.
Times?
It's just like a lot. Sometimes it's, you know, like tales and stuff like that. I want to see everybody, but I have stuff.
Yeah,
and
you're
then
working.
Now with kids, it's like, if you call me on the fly, it's like, I don't think you're really considering much, you know? I can't just kind of do things on a whim.
Yeah,
as
no.
much.
So, yeah, you know, I never even realized you were from New Orleans.
Yeah,
I did know that, and I don't even
you
know
did?
You. Yeah,
yeah.
Because I was like, man, what happened? That's like my Analog was. I loved it, and they're like, he moved back. He moved back.
I mean, you must hear that a lot. Just how many people loved Analog.
It was a phenomenon.
It's bizarre. It's so weird,
so
but I'm so you know, I'm so fortunate for it. It was like because Friday night we went and ate at the new place Maxwell's Trading.
Yeah,
and the bartender was like. I just need to tell you. Analog was my favorite. I was like, what the fuck? That's super bizarre.
I mean, it had a cult following for sure.
Oh, yeah. And it's great to have ended when it, you know, because then it just lives on in people's brains better than it ever, you know.
Yeah.
Burnout versus fade away kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like a star.
So did you, once that was done, did you know you were going to move back to New Orleans?
I had no idea.
How did that come about? Yeah.
Well, I just knew that I was no longer, you know, I was kind of, it was a tough job, you know, and I was kind of ready for the next thing, but I wasn't sure what it was. Terry Alexander is a very big mentor of mine, and we were he's kind of like through the end of it, I was like, what do I do? Do this? And he's like, look, if you're going to leave, why don't you come work at Publican for a little while and then just hang out and we'll figure something out. And so I did. And during that time, I just did a lot of different interviews. And Kirk Stopenall, who's a very old friend of mine and runs Cure in Cureco, was like, hey, our chef is, we're moving on. There's going to be a position there. Would you be interested? I was like, yeah, I floated it by my wife. And long story short, we on a dime, I like went down, went and met with Neil. We went out, checked all the places out, and I was like, yeah, I'll take the job. That was like October 1st. I came back, put in my notice, and was working the Friday after Thanksgiving. I came down, so I was like,
wow.
Yeah, it was quick.
Where's your wife from?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, so closer. Yeah. For her than here.
Yeah. Well, we had gotten married in New Orleans, so you know, we've been together for a very long time. She loves New Orleans. We've always kind of been open to it. And the period of time after Analog until, so I think let's say I quit in May. I don't remember really, April or May. That between then, when I was working at Publican, we started looking at maybe opening another place. Robbie and I were talking a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't really figure it out. I was like, this is crazy. It's like the idea of getting into a new space, like, and putting together the pieces financially to make it work. I was like, I don't know how we're gonna do this on our own. We didn't really have a clear path to it. And I don't know. And then this kind of popped up, and on a dime we just were like, let's do it.
Was Robbie cool about it?
Oh yeah.
Was he haven't spoken since.
Yeah. We actually have this whole like, me, him, and Hank are always sending each other like ridiculous memes.
And where's Hank now?
Hank is I forgot where.
He's on Instagram.
Utah.
Yeah. He's not. Yeah. I knew he wasn't here anymore.
Yeah, he's in the middle of America. And then Robbie will be back in Raleigh.
Yeah, NC. Mm-hmm.
They always signing me up for like Joe Bonamassa fan club. Like, I'll get like, you know, like random shit. Or that's like, I'm friend. In the John Mayer fan club. Like thanks yeah. Hank.
Okay, so you grew up in New Orleans.
Yeah, this is a good in medias res start. Right. Yeah, let's zoom out. Where are you going, Danny?
Yeah. Tell us about where you grew up.
Yeah. I grew up just outside of New Orleans, called River Ridge, which is, 15 minutes outside of the French Quarter. We spent a lot of our teenage years going downtown and doing dumb stuff. And worked in restaurants, starting, dishwashing around like 15.
Yeah.
Were your parents in the industry?
Not at all. No.
Quite the opposite.
I was born to Cuban immigrants. And so my dad was an engineer. My mom was, raised four kids at home. And was a neighborhood seamstress.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, food and hospitality was not part of, and it still is, it's something they don't really get.
Yeah,
really.
No good meals at home growing up.
Fantastic meals.
Oh, all right. Food was there.
Food was there, but the restaurant is not a professionalism that, it's a professional direction that they. It's like either.
Yeah, they didn't endorse it.
Yeah, either your engineer, lawyer, doctor, one of those kind of like traditional things. I still, so they kind of pushed me my whole way to get my degree.
Yeah.
But I'd always been working in restaurant. So, yeah, I did a lot of that and music, actually. And that's how I met Kirk. Kirk was like a pretty famous ska band.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Huge. Yeah, in the 90s, he was into, like, Less Than Jake's, their record label called Fueled by Ramen. So, like, Kirk was, like, this local god.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fueled by Ramen.
Fueled by Ramen. Name. Yeah. His band was called the Superflies, but Fueled by Ramen was the label that they were on, so... Yeah, they were like big deal, and I remember looking up to Kirk because I was in like little bands too, and then one day, Kirk and I were in band together, and that was like right before Katrina, And then, you know, I didn't actually even want to leave Katrina, you know, fast forward a whole bunch of years and working in restaurants and, you know, simple things between bussing tables and working in kitchens there. 2005, I was 24 and here comes like hurricane season and they're like, hey, there's a big one coming.
How often had you heard that though?
Like all the time.
Yeah.
So it was like, who cares? Like we had actually just evacuated for one and come back. And it was like, you go to Memphis, you party for a night or two, you come back. No big deal. Sometimes we wouldn't even leave. We would have parties. I had this legendary party in 2002 where we played football in the hurricane. You know, like it was like we got a couple of cases of Bud Heavies and like played football and it was no big deal. It was like hysterical. This year, you know, in 2005, I was dating someone and their dad was like, you got to get my daughter out of here. And I was like, okay. And wow. So we were like at Molly's on the market, having a beer, looking at the screen going, yeah, I think this thing is coming here. And so went home. And, you know, the thing about leaving for a hurricane is generally they do this thing called contraflow where they open up both sides of the expressway, I mean the highway, to only go out. There's no coming in. So to try to alleviate
The congestion.
Yeah, because it's bad. It'll go, you know, both ways. So Houston and Florida, everybody goes those ways. Nobody goes north for some reason. I was like, we're going north. We're going 55. 55 starts down there.
Yeah.
So
was it like bumper to bumper traffic getting out?
Well, what I was like, I don't know. I was like, wise beyond my years. I don't know. I was like, let's eat dinner and go to bed and then wake up at like 3, 4. And then we left. And then we left like, it was still dark out. And we drove to Memphis and we got there. It's like a 6-hour drive. Hung out for the day, yada, yada. Went out, partied, no big deal. Partied really strong, you know. Woke up in the morning and somebody was like, hey, like the levees broke. And then it just got worse. And then like shit was just like, and then it got crazy because that was like cell phone days. Everybody was on like the Motorola system. Well, anybody that had like a 504 number, you couldn't talk to anybody with a 504 number. So like you couldn't, it was just a busy signal.
Oh.
It was like all the low
towers.
Yeah. Or whatever the technology was at the time.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What was technology at the time? 3G?
No, it was pre-3G probably. Yeah. Oh.
So, yeah, 2005. So, I mean, I had a little Nokia where you could play Snake.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
And it was like,
did you know people that like didn't evacuate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those were some crazy stories. I mean, some of those, I mean, they changed people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was
And your
nuts.
Family all got out?
Yeah.
When you're packing to leave, are you taking
so that was
valuables? Is this like
no? I mean, some people are smarter than others. I didn't take a damn thing.
Well, yeah, you were reluctantly kind of leaving and being
so
like, "There,
like
this
a
isn't
backpack,
gonna
literally with a change of a couple of nights worth of clothes
and a Superfly cassette,
and that was it. And so we went to Memphis and like. There was a bunch of us in Memphis. And so like we all started kind of, you know, I was 24 years old. I didn't have a savings account. I didn't have money. So, and we're all like staying in hotels. Like I maxed out my Discover card in like no time. And then it was like, what do we do? And then everybody started like getting little jobs around Memphis to like make money. And so all those jobs went away real quick. And then the thing about the phone is you couldn't call other 504 people, but people could call you. And I had a friend here and he called me. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, girl, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is crazy. And he's like, well, come to Chicago, I'll get your job tomorrow. And I was like, I'm on my way. We're halfway there. And,
Was the girlfriend still with you at the time?
She was. Yeah.
So she came along for the journey.
She came along. It was a very difficult conversation because she had one of her friends with us and we had to sit her down and be like, I don't know where you're going, but you could figure that out. We got a place to stay. I can't take you. Like, so we kind of had to like,
that's brutal.
It was brutal. Yeah. I remember like, I'll never forget that. I'm sure she can't either, but, it was a lot of tough decisions and a lot of crazy stuff at that time. And, we drove up here, got here kind of late. I remember like getting up 55 and seeing the city and just being like, holy shit, never seen something on that kind of level, never driven on a highway with so many lanes.
Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't know 55 went all the way down.
Wow. Yeah.
And then, like, were you able to process Katrina yet, or were you starting to process it?
It was such a crazy time. And also being so far from it, like, you know, Chicago was very welcoming and incredible people, but it was like, when you're far away from tragedy, you could kind of, you have that buffer, right? It's kind of hard to understand, especially for people that age too. So the guy I came and stayed with, he wanted, like, the next day he got in, he wanted to bring us out. So we went to, like, Sonotech the first night, and like, he'd be like, introduce us, like, these guys are from New Orleans. You know, like, they're here from after Katrina. And they're like, oh, okay, that must be kind of weird. You know, it was like, it was such a weird thing. I kind of tried my best not to even talk about it because it was like,
no one could relate.
Conversations were just weird.
Yeah.
But he got me a job immediately. And it was with, like, almost the second night he took off. And he was like, you need to go to this party. The House of Blues upstairs. It ended up being Chanel's party, Peace, Mark Hellner's wife.
Okay.
Ended up hearing her birthday party. She's like, you need to go talk to Terry. He's going to be there. And I'm like, okay. So we roll up into this very intimate party. You know, I don't have, I'm borrowing some of my friend's clothes, and I'm like, excuse me, sir. I heard that you guys are opening a new restaurant. And he's like, yeah. But don't worry about it. Okay, yeah, we'll take care of you tomorrow. I was like, oh, God, I feel like such an idiot. And I met in that room, I met a lot of incredible people, like, right off the rip, that ended up being, you know, Chanel gave us a TV, and Andrew Zimmerman was there, and he, like, got us jobs at Del Toro. And I worked at, I ended up working at Francesca's Forno, and my girlfriend at the time ended up working for the Spring Restaurant Group. And they just all took us in and got us, like, a bed. And we didn't have jack shit, you know? Like, it was crazy. Like, I went to IKEA and I was like, we'll take it. You know, like, our room was like a
prefab room.
Yeah. So it was like, it was kind of bonkers looking back on it. But
you really lucked out. Wandering into that crowd. Who was the friend that lured you up to Chicago?
His name was Charlie Cooper. He's actually passed away a couple of years ago. But he was a musician, but also very strongly into the food scene. He worked for the Spring Restaurant Group at the time.
That's Sean McClain.
That's right. Yeah. And that's when Sean was like, just won the James Beard Award, or was about to. So they were like killing it. Spring and Green Zebra. Before Custom House. So, Charlie was a friend of mine that I also played music with, and had a pretty low-key successful group, but he also always worked in hospitality. And, so he introduced me to that group, and it was it's funny looking back on it, because I didn't realize, like, Francesca's was, like, already open, and they had already hired the opening team, but they put me on anyways. And like, and now I'm realizing, like, oh, they were just like, they trained me as a food runner for like a month. like they were just being nice. Yeah. Like they didn't need me. But they were just, that's Terry's team. That's how they are, you know? And it was great. And, you know, somebody ended up quitting or getting fired on the floor, and I picked up a couple of shifts, and then I was ended up being there for a while. And then, you know, I was always doing a little or a lot of music and working in restaurants at the same time. So I kind of came here and did a lot more music and a little less food, which was cool.
What venues were you playing?
You know, the Bottle, Sub T. I did a lot of recording. I lived in a studio, and I was kind of like a studio guitarist for a little bit, in a sense, you know, recorded on a lot of different, I played like pedal steel and recorded on a lot of weird stuff.
So venues and restaurants all you're, at the same time. Wicker Park kid.
I lived on Milwaukee Boulevard at some point. That's where the studio was.
Did you ever cross paths with Greg Corner? He lived on Milwaukee forever. He's a DJ.
Very tight with Alan Del Rio Ortiz, his old roommate.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a DJ guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then he started becoming billed as like the White House DJ because he DJed for Obama.
Did
for
he?
Some sort of event.
Yeah. He and like Matt Rohn and all, all cross paths. Yeah. It was kind of crazy. I worked at Forno for a while, about 3 years or so. And then my friend Charlie that got us, he ended up passing away and I ended up going down for New Orleans for a while. And to like, you know, he was from there. So we went down for the funeral and I stayed and then ended up staying for a little while and then ended up coming back to Chicago. And he was in a group and I ended up doing a tour and replace, you know, like he had just finished a record in this group and they needed somebody to do his part. So I went on tour with him. And I remember as I was on that tour, either Terry or Peter Garfield called me. They were both on the phone at the same time. And they were like, hey, we're opening this place. Big Star. And I was like, yeah, I want to work there for sure. So I ended up, remember them being like, how many shifts do you think you want? I was like, I don't know. My rent was like $400 at the time. So I was like, I probably need like two or three shifts. I don't know. So that I came back from the tour and ended up more or less just going straight into working at Big Star.
What was Big Star like in the early days?
I mean, you guys know, it was nuts.
Yeah. Was Mark Kellner on the opening team too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's been there since day
since
one.
Since day one. Yeah. He you know, he managed at Danny's for years.
Okay.
We were really tight too. Mark's also like a pretty big, you know, a lot of these guys have like these weird, Mark has like a fairly successful music career in another country.
Oh, really? What country?
All over Europe. Like Pulse Programming was kind of, I remember bringing an artist to Big Star from Mexico. And I was like, that's Mark Kellner of Pulse Programming. And he goes, what is he doing on that side of the bar? Like, did he just walk back there because they don't care? Like, and like, that's the thing about Chicago is like, there's a lot of these guys have like, you know, minor success in many things. And
yeah, living
you would never
lives.
Know it. Yeah. I mean, that's what blew my mind when I moved here. It's like, we hung out at the Rainbow Club and basically anybody and everybody that I was into, you know, was working at the Rainbow.
Yeah.
You know, like different guys from Tortoise were working the door or bartending or, you know, Tim Kinsella was bartending. It was like, what am I? It was also like a big eye opener. Like, what am I shooting for here? Like,
yeah.
So it was kind of crazy, but.
Yeah, it is kind of, I mean, those two industries, music and hospitality, kind of go hand in hand. I think the lifestyle kind of lends itself.
Very much so.
Yeah. It's, makes
very
sense.
Much so. Yeah. And we were all in one way or not, you know, that's how I met Robbie and Hank. You know, they actually were both working, what is it, valet at Sonatech.
Oh, yeah.
And crazy. And my girlfriend at the time was like, there's these cute boys. I was like, who are these guys? And then like I met them and I was like, these guys are great. And I might have even played on one of their records or something like that. And we were just, but everybody was always kind of into music. You know, like Laurent.
Yeah.
Was my bar back for like a week. They brought him on and like, this guy's the real deal. So they made him a manager pretty quickly. But Laurent was like, you know, I tell my cousin, oh yeah, the guitarist from Pelican was my bar back. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's crazy. You know, like.
Laurent's still a Big Star, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's still holding out, him and Mark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I started doing that, bartending there. And then I had an extra shift a week at the Charleston.
And you were bartending during these shifts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just...
So you weren't working back of the house yet?
I'd always worked... The thing about it, I started working back... I started working in kitchen and in restaurants.
Yeah, you started as a dishwasher.
Yeah. And that was 95. So from 95 to 2005 in New Orleans, I would do the thing where you're like, I work a year in the back of house and get tired of not making any money and go to the front of house and then get tired of talking to people. So I just kind of kept flip-flopping.
Yeah.
You know, and then I worked for a woman there was Susan had worked for Susan Spicer, and she just like, my life went from black and white to color, you know, like she was like, just kind of showed us what food was, you know. It was like my first like medium rare duck breast, and I was like, what are haricot verts? And she's like, yeah, pick up the book, and like, you know, she'd like, you know, and I just learned about food. That was like the one of the last jobs I had before I moved from New Orleans to Chicago. But the money was always undoubtedly drastically better. So when I came to Chicago, it was even better in the front of house. So I just stayed there, and like music was kind of happening. And so when I was at Big Star, I had actually this really incredible opportunity. I started at Big Star, and then that opened in November, and I got asked to go record an album in Mexico with a German artist by the name of Apparat. So I spent 3 months down there, and I was like, this is it. We did it. Like, holy shit, I made it. Like,
yeah,
I did this record with this guy. It was going to be a big deal. It actually got signed to Mute, which is like Radiohead, Depeche Mode, like big deal. Well, he ended up scrapping like 90% of the record. And like, I kind of got let go. Oh, me and my other counterpart kind of like, but he was like, scored this huge publishing deal. And the whole time I was down there, I cooked every meal. It was like this little fishing village. It was in Sayulita. So I'd go down. We hardly ate at restaurants. I cooked for them the whole time. And so when we found out that we got let go, he's like, well, I signed this publishing deal and I still have a lot of money. And I'm kind of thinking about investing in a restaurant, and was thinking you would come out here and open a restaurant for me. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Number one. No.
First off, what the hell are you talking
about? And I was like, he's like, no, I think you, I was like, well, what does that say? Like I guess my cooking might be better than my music is what you're saying. That's fine. Okay. And then I started slowly. So as I came back, like, and lost that job, which was supposed to be like the biggest ticket of my life, but didn't happen. I started working one night a week at Charleston on Mondays, and it was dead. So what I started doing was Crockpot Mondays. And, you know, I would bring, I think the first one, you know, you brought red beans and rice. And then I brought, next one, I brought gumbo. And then I brought jambalaya. And the crowds kind of started picking up little by little by little. And people were coming for Crockpot Monday.
Wow.
Yeah. It turned into this guy that was doing a pop-up at one of the Miko's Italian Ices during the winter was like, hey, I really like what you're doing. I have this little pop-up called Flipside. I'd like you to be the chef. It only seats 10 people. I don't know what I'm doing. You don't seem to know what you're doing, but maybe we could figure something out. And I'm like, cool.
We both was that common to do pop-ups at Miko's?
No, he worked there. He had like worked in like tech world and like just faded out. Was like, I'm done with this shit. I want to do, he was really into baking bread, making cookies, and making pour over coffee. It's now same day cafe.
Oh, wow.
But the second iteration of it, we did together in the Miko's, the one that you stepped down into on Damon. Yeah,
Damon, gone now.
RIP. Yeah. But we did this thing and it kind of, it was hysterical. It sat like 10 people and I took it so freaking serious. And we, like the opening menu, I swear, was grilled cheese, tomato soup, and arugula salad. And that was it. But we made every little aspect of it. We made a couple kinds of cookies. And then it grew into like we made little hand pies. And then we started doing brunch. And we started doing more breads and more sandwiches. And then Julia Kramer, who was a regular of mine at Big Star, who I didn't know who she was.
That's so funny.
Came in and like wrote about the brunch. And like, next thing you know, it was like, boom, it like was popular as shit. Well, to a degree. And it was only like, you know, this pop-up that lasted a couple of weeks. But from that, one day Robbie and Hank came in. I'm like, this is cool, man. We really liked these little meat pies I made. And Hank was like, I want you to try out. We're going to open this place. I want you to try out to be the chef. And they had tried out someone else. And they really had a specific thing in mind. And he like actually brought me the Mission Chinese cookbook. And he's like, I went to this place. I think it'd be cool if you did this. I was like, I don't know anything about Chinese food. I am not a chef.
They wanted Mission Chinese part two.
Yeah. I don't know this. I was like, here's what I do know. Yeah. We just threw a party at my house and it was a Mardi Gras party and I made po' boys and gumbo and dirty rice for people. And it was sick. I know how to do that. If you guys want me to try out for it, that's cool. I'll do it. But this is what I know how to do, and this is what I'll do. And they're like, okay. And they came over to my house, and me and my wife helped me prep it. And we did a tasting there, and they're like, sick, you got the job. And I beat out, like, a pretty good chef.
Can you say who it is?
I don't think so. I don't
All right, know. Okay.
He'll tell us after. Maybe. Then Daniel will tweet it.
Yeah. So. Whoa. So you totally the food identity pivoted with your talent.
Right. Yeah. And so I had to like backwards kind of learn, you know, and in that interim time, I was doing a lot of like little catering gigs here and there.
Yeah. It's like you must have learned how to like do proper cooking, but the way you're telling it is like.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out when did you learn to cook?
In New Orleans, I would work a gig or two. Exactly. I would work a couple of gigs here and there.
So it's just all back of house, just kind of like learning on, you know, learning on the job.
Always. Yeah.
Okay.
Being observant and caring and paying attention.
Now, let me ask you this real quick. Is that the same way you picked up music or were you classically trained?
No. Later in life, I've started taking classical lessons, but I learned more. I took a lesson when I was like 15, 14. And I learned more from the kid sitting next to me who was like 11. He showed me like the intro to like Inner Sandman or something while we're learning all this crap, you know, because like I'm like, I guess ADHD or something, you know. So,
but there's something to that, like being able to learn in that way.
I've always been a terrible student, but always good at teaching myself. I've always been that way.
Yeah.
Like I always, when I had automobiles, like young, like got my first cars, I'd always get the Haynes manual and like figure it out and I like could fix my car.
Yeah.
Or even like calculus. I fucking was failing out of it, but I figured out like, okay, if I pull off a couple of these last couple of tests, I could not fail for the semester. So I like gave myself a crash course in calculus in college in like a couple of weeks and ended up pulling off a C in the class by not going to class. So like, I don't like listening to people, but I can figure shit out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
People learn differently. And that's why standardized schools are so difficult.
You it know, does not work for me.
Tailored for
yeah.
The
yeah.
Student.
Yeah. It doesn't work for me. And that's always kind of been my thing. Especially with guitar. Like it's always like big points of revelation where you're like,
I know I haven't had a single revelation with the guitar and I don't think my brain works that way. Yeah. I think I could spend hours and hours. I don't because it just doesn't come naturally to me, but it's so fucking frustrating.
There was a point later in life where teaching, I learned to like love it. But I had a strong reference point where I didn't listen to anybody else for a long time. Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you by Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, a tasty, versatile spirit. Created in Chicago in 2012, the product was born out of a need for a bespoke iteration of the Old Tom style, which is the slightly sweeter predecessor to London Dry. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin carries classic notes of orange peel, juniper, and coriander, while balancing on a subtle floral edge thanks to the addition of osmanthus blossoms. Its elevated proof is suitable in cocktails or unadorned. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, complete your bar.
One of the first things before that analog gig that kind of got, like, I did a friend of mine's wedding, 100 people.
Yeah.
I did the food myself. I was like, okay. So, like, I kind of learned how to, like, procure and coordinate and organize out of somebody's, my wife's studio apartment and make all this crap. And at that party, you know, kind of led to another thing where, like, the owners of Rodan were there. And they're like, oh, can you do our Christmas party? And then, like, the early days of Red and White Wines, I would do a lot of pop-ups there, and unbeknownst to me, Julia Kramer would be there, and I didn't know it was Julia. You know, like, so, like, I ended up, she ended up helping out, like, along the way, doing some good
Yeah, like press and
press
stuff.
Yeah.
I loved Rodan. That was like, that was a real moment on Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That was like the fancy restaurant to go to for me.
Yeah. We hung out there a little too much.
And then Crocodile for free pizza with every drink.
I never went there. Never. Oh, really? I was like Rodan, Rainbow, Danny's all the time.
Yeah. Had you heard of Crocodile? Like literally every drink you ordered, you would get a free pizza.
No, it just wasn't for me. It wasn't. I just had my friends at work here and my friends at work there, and we love Danny's.
Yeah, Danny's the best.
Yeah.
So you kind of learned as you went, like with.
Yeah.
With
so Analog. I got the gig. I got the gig at Analog, but there was, you know, they hadn't even, maybe the ink had just dried, you know, so they haven't done build out yet. So, you know, I have 6 to 9 months. And they're like, I was like, all right, I'm going to figure this out. So I remember going to Justin Large and being like, hey man, I want to stage this summer, these next couple of months at every place at the same time.
Yeah.
And he was like, why don't you just pick one? And I was going to, and then I was playing, we had like this pickup Big Star team, the Big Star guys and girls. We'd go to Eckerd Park on Sunday nights and play like this knockdown pickup game where we all got completely destroyed and played softball, and it was beautiful. And Duncan and the Lula team would come, and Rootstock guys would come. We'd play these pickup games, and I just started talking to Duncan from Rootstock, and I had gone to eat there a couple of times, and I'm like, I fucking love this place. And he's like, well, why don't you come work for me? So I just worked there for like 6 months, you know, learned how to cut tape and learned how to like his systems, and I thought his systems were real clean and organized, and kind of, you know, did a couple of stages in that time. And then I really, 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 really lucked out by hiring the right people to help me open Analog. Hanging out at Rootstock, Danny Kaplan would come in, and, you know, Duncan was like, hey, you should meet her. And we started talking, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And she was like, this sounds cool to me. And then Freddie Neunach as well. So I had like this kind of like, really good team to help me open. Bobby Mayo, incredible team. Duncan was actually getting ready to open a place, so he helped me for a little while. You know, we also had the advantage that it wasn't a restaurant, it was a cocktail bar, so people came in to check them out. So the start wasn't like, you know, we didn't get our asses kicked off the rip. It wasn't like,
yeah, you weren't getting overwhelmed from day one.
Yeah. It was an afterthought until, I don't know if it was you guys, but somebody, maybe you and Paul McGee brought in Mike Sula. I didn't know. I still don't know. I want to take a look, but he came in and wrote.
You probably took him. Oh, no.
He wrote a piece that, you know.
That's okay, Danny. You don't have to stomp on Mike's picture.
Yeah, Mike's fell off the wall now. Yeah, so he came in and wrote about
it. He wrote about it, and it was like, you know, to be nice. Yeah, I've never met this guy. Yeah, I wouldn't. That's funny. I've always pictured him differently, but, you know, he said something like, I think it was, drinks get top billing, but food steals the show or something like that. And all of a sudden, the LTH guys started writing about it. And then it all of a sudden just got this very, as we grew, so did the following. So it was super organic and kind of allowed me and the team to kind of, to grow together. And it was magical time. It was a super fun situation, you know, and it was like a lot of cool musicians that worked there. A lot of cool people that worked there. Everybody just came through and was having a lot of fun. I was a little anxious, you know, like I was always like trying to be super focused, and my wife would come in with her friends and just kind of throw down. And so that was like a really crazy, it was almost 3 years.
So it's this magical time. We all love it.
Yeah.
Many love it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it comes to an end. And then like, how do you find yourself kind of running all the food for Kiriko?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was really, Kirk actually, as you, some people know, like he moved with me during Katrina evacuation. I went to go work at Francesca's Forno. He went to Del Toro, on to Open Violet Hour. Great job. Killed it. Did a bunch of consulting around town. Went back to New Orleans to be with his now wife. Opened up Cure with Neil. And then they started kind of growing.
Yeah, Neil and my cousin went to high school together.
Oh, shit.
That's, yeah, that's super weird.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Cousin Ben and Neil.
Where? Ben.
Yeah, New Orleans. Ben Schiller.
Ben Schiller.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, he lives in Boston now, but
okay.
They,
but yeah, went to Newman.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. With the Mannings.
Yep.
Interesting. That's cool. Well, I would go all the time. You know, they're cocktail guys. They had a lot of opportunities along the way and kind of started growing, but never really had a grounded food person. And they opened Cane and Table, which was supposed to be more of like tiki-esque, you know. And they got a chef kind of later, and then they had another opportunity to open a restaurant, and they did. They took the chef from Cane and Table, put him there, and things were just kind of not working. And as a friend from the outside, you know, I came down to visit, and they helped me for like my wedding. Like I ordered all my beer and champagne through them. And as a friend from the outside, I was always kind of like, man, it's like, I know this could be, we could button this up a little bit. Like you guys are on a freaking level, but it doesn't seem. And so like Kirk had kind of like been like, hey, I think we might be an opportunity, but it would like kind of ghost it, you know? So then I like had this moment. It's like very Jerry Maguire situation where I like, cause I knew all the guys working there, you know, like the manager at Cure was a great friend of mine. Kirk's a great friend of mine. Just not the best like phone guy, and Neil. And so I wrote this email to them that was like, let me do this. Like, I want this job. And it was like this long, yada, 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 yada.
Who's coming with me?
No, but I had this whole vision of everything. Yeah, and it was like, yeah. And it's really funny because like, and my, you know, attention to detail, blah, 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 blah. And then here's my phone number. Call me. And I put the wrong phone number. And Neil said, classic. Attention to detail. Classic. So that was it. I went down, interviewed, went back and forth about the details of how it would work. Took the job. I was working at Publican, put my notice in, and then that was it. Like, we had a party for Thanksgiving. I left the next day. Kristen, my wife, stayed here. I was like, I'm going to be busy because I'm going to be digging this restaurant out of the trenches. And so she stayed till like February. And yeah, they had this place in the Bywater called Henri that I was trying to save, but it just didn't happen. I mean, it was already too far gone.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I went down, started working. That was November, somewhere around the end of the summer, July, right after Tales of the Cocktail, where they were like, we can't do another capital call. We're going to call it on this. Your job's still good, but Cafe Henri's done. You know, we gave it a run. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, no big deal. Okay, I just moved here. It's not gonna freak out.
Not gonna freak out.
And to sweeten the deal, I think Kristen had just gotten pregnant.
Nice.
Well, yeah, I was like, okay, no big deal. No big deal. We're good here. But here's the deal. And we're going to do something else. You know, it's like, if there's a future here, we need to do something, and we need to do something bigger, you know, because it was like kind of like a small operation. And that's when I was like, we need to find a big, you know, a big thing that's going to make this kind of grow. And I went, and that was the end of the meeting. And I went downstairs and talked to one of the other partners. Neil has a partner that kind of is in control of he's a general contractor. He's a real visionary. You know, finds the space, sees what it's supposed to be, builds it out. He created Cure with Neil, you know, like, have you been, I know you've been.
Yeah, there. Yeah, I haven't, no.
It's great. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. his name's Matthew Conkey. And I remember going outside after that meeting, and he was like, so this place you worked in Chicago, like Big Star, could you do something like that? And I was like, I don't fucking know. I think so. I was like, I don't want to, you know, I was like, I had an idea that I wanted to do a fast casual place that was along the lines, you know, that of analog, like chicken and biscuits, you know.
Yeah.
But cool drinks and just different ambiance. And he started working on it. It took forever, but then we ended up signing the lease and building out what is now Val's, which is kind of a funny story because, like I said, I wanted to do like chicken and biscuits and a fast casual in that way. And I remember going to Terry at Big Star and being like, hey, man, all right, we're trying to figure out how to do this and raise money and all this stuff. What do you think about a concept like this? He goes, buddy, why would you do that? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, look at this place. Look at all these people here. Like, you know, like, it's, why would you do something like this? I was like, well, I don't want you guys to laugh at me. And he goes, laugh on the way to the bank, dude. You know, he was just like, he's like, you could, he's like, I was like, I don't want you and Mark to make fun of me for fucking, he's like, we didn't invent tacos, you know, like, and he's like, I was like, all right. So, we ended up building Val's very much in
the Big Star vein.
Yeah, very much so. I remember, and I remember like Paul coming down for some event with Ryan, and like we all met up for drinks one night, and I was like, Paul, I'm going to do this thing, man, and it's going to be kind of close. And he's like, I worked at Frontera. Like, where did you? He's like, I know, it's a good thing. It's all about the location and execution. And so, fast forward. We get pretty deep into the build out for it, and the pandemic hits, and we are like, you know, just pretty deep into the build out, and then everything stopped. And then luckily, you know, Neil kind of had the one day was just like, Matthew kept pushing, kept building it out, but we didn't know what the hell we were gonna do. And one day Neil was just like, looks good to me. We're opening. We're going to do this. Like, I'm like, really? I'm like, okay, shit. Like, it was crazy, but we ended up March, April, May, we had a rebooted Cane and Table with like some, you know, to-go situation, and that sucked. Had to do the same thing for Cure. Like, looking back, I wish we would have just all stayed closed a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But we just held this had to get open thing.
Yeah.
Push to get those open and get them working and get them operational. And then we turned our sights to Val's, which we were like gratefully in debt. You know, we had a lot of money put into this thing. And we're like, okay, well, we're just going to do a really small menu, do it out of the window, and people will just seat themselves. No big deal. Opening night, there's a line like blocks and blocks, and you're just like, oh shit. Okay, wait. And like, because it's all outdoors.
Yeah,
we were like the only game in town. Like, yeah, pre-pandemic, it was a little bit of a risk, right? Not a lot of people wanted outdoor seating in New Orleans. I don't know if you've ever been there. It gets hot, it's sweaty, it's disgusting. Pandemic, you like the outdoor seating.
Yeah.
And so like, okay, so all of a sudden we had like one of the busiest things in town. In the middle of like the first service, we had to like, you know, switch to like table seating and all this stuff, and then it just kind of like was crazy.
Nice. It sounds like a happy ending to that story.
More or less. Yeah. I mean, really thankful for both of them to continue to put one foot in front of the other, both Matthew and Neil.
Yeah, they didn't come to you the night before and say, we want to do Mission Chinese style menu.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that was wild.
What happened to Mission? I was just at the one. Well, in San
Danny had, you know, there's a lot of
cancellation situation.
I think this food's still good from what I understand.
Yeah, I was at the San Francisco one last year. I love the food. But New York's gone, right?
New York's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw a video with him the other day, but I have no idea. Yeah. I'd gotten to go eat at the one in New York. It was great. But
yeah, it was great. I ate it both. And
I ran into great. I ran into Terry at the one in New York. Really? And I didn't even really know Terry. I would just always see him at Big Star. And my wife's like, hey, that's the guy from Big Star. She's like, let's go say hello. We did. And Terry's like, it's like, hey, we're going out after. He's like, we're going to Milk and Honey. You guys want to go with? And we didn't, because we were visiting friends. But it's like the first time I met Terry.
Did you take care of his bill?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. You even have to ask that? Of course I did. Oh, man. This episode of Joiners is brought to you by Stock Manufacturing, makers of fine hospitality workwear. You obsess over the details in your space, so why stop at your staff's uniforms? Stock has something for every aesthetic. From fine dining to a corner cafe, they've got you covered. Choose from in-stock, ready-to-wear options, or design the perfect custom uniform for your team. For more information, visit stockmfgco.com.
All right, sweet. Should we hit him with a gratuity round?
All right. What is your death row meal?
Let's see. I would probably say like maybe contramar or something like that. Just like seafood heavy situation. If you guys ever been, but it's just Mexican seafood spot. It's like super classy and very, you know, they invented the tuna tostada, or the chef there is just like super clean and fresh seafood stuff prepared very simply with, and then you get tortillas and very gracious service, carajillos at the end.
Where is it?
Mexico City.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Contramar.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've never been there.
I haven't been to Mexico City either. I would like to.
You guys never been? Oh, shit.
Sounds like Fredo's taking us to Mexico City.
Actually, I went with Jonathan Zaragoza recently.
Oh, really?
It was the worst trip of my life.
Is that sarcastic?
Because he missed his flight.
Oh, actually the worst trip of your life.
So I had like the first night I went out by myself, and it was like a Monday through Friday. And I was like, oh, man, he missed his flight. And I just went ham on the first night on seafood. It went crazy. And I don't know if it was like the Monday seafood.
Oh, my God. Was this recently?
Yes. He came back and did a dinner with y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
this was right before the Wanda Wega dinner, I think, right?
I think he came back and y'all did the Lula cookbook dinner.
Oh, it was that recently.
Yeah, okay.
And, so you were sick the whole time?
I was like beyond sick. And he's like, come on, man, let's go. And I was like, dude.
Was it a bad water situation?
No, he said it was like bad water. I mean,
I ate like a pound of raw scallops. And then went and had like oysters, and you know, there's like these chocolate clams are a thing. I had like so much stuff. I've spent probably a total of like 6 months in Mexico, like traveling there and hanging out there. Never been sick like this. Woo. And then like somewhere on like Wednesday, I woke up to take some medicine. And I took my night medicine in the morning too. So I was like just dead. It was like the worst trip ever. Poor Jonathan like ended up having to like go. And he's like, you know, he was like going out with his camera, but like we'd go to dinner and I'd be like, no, nope, I'm leaving. So anyways, yeah.
Contramar, something
like that. Seafood tower kind of situation.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. What is a New Orleans dish that Midwesterners don't know about, but should?
I know y'all never ask this to nobody.
No, we ask everybody. We've never had the same answer twice.
I guess maybe Boudin might be one.
I know Boudin. That's one we haven't heard of. Actually, it came up recently on the pod.
Boudin?
Yeah. Boudin?
Yeah.
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 All right, well.
Your answer's been rejected.
Throwing it right back.
That's a good, I mean.
There's another one called Ponce. It's pretty similar. That is made in a bladder and steamed. How about that?
That's what I'm talking about.
Ponce.
Ponce de Leon.
Yeah. It's like a Christmas one.
Okay. All right. And then for the trailers, it's very seldom we have an out-of-towner in the studio. So from an insider's perspective, if you're spending 4 days in New Orleans, what's the hit list? What are the places you should check out? How do you avoid the tourist traps?
Well, sure. Ferret Street's great, where Cure is. I happen to be part of a restaurant that's been there about the same amount of time that kind of hits all the stuff that you need when you're in New Orleans. A nice gumbo, po' boys, fried chicken, red beans, all that kind of stuff. It's called Hi Hat. And it's a big, big deal for tourists and mostly locals, but you see a lot of, it's a great spot. That's one of them. Casamento's is another that I always recommend. In oyster season, they do raw, fried, and it's incredible because it's like maybe like 120 year old restaurant. and you go through to go to the bathroom in the kitchen, and it's just like two like home ovens with pots, and they like fry everything out of them. And it's, yeah, it was kind of the inspiration for the analog chicken sandwich, because they just did, they don't do po' boys, they do loaves. So you get it on white bread and you get an oyster sandwich, and it is beyond good.
Well, since Tim asked for 4 days, that we're only like a quarter of the way there now.
Yeah.
I think that I might extend my trip.
Little Dizzy's, they did my wedding. It's on Esplanade. It's like a soul food place. And actually, I mean, it's just incredible. They do a buffet, but it'll just put you in a coma. It's so damn good. And a little bit more contemporary one is Bacchanal.
Yeah.
The wine place. Good. Yeah.
How about dive bars?
Dive bars. Geez, I don't go out too much
these
days.
Like the Aaron Rose for Chicago people, I guess.
Right. Aaron Rose is a good one. The most divey of all is the Saint. Then you definitely the Jake's Christmas bar. Snake and Jake's is the most famous one for sure. Most diviest of dive. They don't even like start until one.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was like the thing that like was really weird for me when I moved here. It was like I couldn't get my mind around getting out before 12. Like, yeah. So, and I go into Danny's and then get kicked out at 2. I was like, what the?
Yeah, like I'm just getting started.
I'm just getting started. So I like started saving money and losing weight like crazy, like really fast. Yeah.
All right. And then leading into, what's your favorite hidden gem restaurant? Is it one of those that you just mentioned?
You know, I was wondering if Rootstock could be classified as that.
Yeah, Rootstock's great. Someone else has mentioned it. It's on the list.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not rejecting it.
Yeah. No.
we will accept it.
No, accepted.
All right. We'll move on then. Favorite fast food.
Oh, shoot. I don't even mess with this, but, you know, the guy from Lily Q's has been, like, posting this thing lately about the McDonald's burger hack. I don't know if you guys have seen this. Justin Large pushed it too. It's like you basically order. So I would say something McDonald's if I had to, although I haven't had it in a very long time. But he does this thing where you order the McDonald's burger, extra patty, extra cheese, extra pickles, extra onion, and then you microwave it for 15 minutes in the wrapper. And it's
15 minutes?
15 seconds. Oh. 15 seconds in the wrapper. And supposedly, it's top five burger experiences in America.
Wow.
This is crazy.
I don't know. It's a new thing. I don't know.
Right, that's like a viral.
But we'll my wife used to do this thing where she would order the classic kids burger, you know, no meat, add fries. And that was the delicious.
The veggie burger?
Is that it wasn't a veggie burger. Yeah, it was just a burger.
Cheeseburger, but no meat.
That's what
no,
I mean.
No meat, add fries. Potato burger.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a French fry sandwich at Analog, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think I remember that, actually.
Yeah, it's French fries with mushroom debris.
Yeah,
exactly. It was pretty good.
All right, least favorite food.
Fast food.
That 15-minute burger.
Yeah.
This weekend, you know, my in-laws were in town, so, and it was my father-in-law's birthday, and we went out to eat. He really loved Luminati's, so, and like, you know, the kids were there and they wanted to do Luminati's. And I was like, I took a bite. My nephew got the thin crust cheese, and I took a bite. And I was like, I can't even do this.
Yeah.
I was like, it's not worth it. I'm not, yeah.
All right. Favorite cocktail?
Probably all time is like the Oaxacan Old Fashioned.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Here's our.
Is Kirk the Gunshop Fizz?
Or that's Kirk is the Gunshop Fizz.
Yeah. It's crazy.
The legend.
Yeah. You do that?
No, I mean, that's just like, I mean, I don't know, Cure on the Map. I mean, it was just a what huge is it? Cocktail.
It's like, time. Yeah, there's a
it's
little
bit. It's a Peychaud Bitters base. And then, so that was like already crazy. So it was like 2 ounces of Peychaud Bitters.
2 ounces?
Yep. There's a cucumber, orange peel, and like strawberry. And then it's like shaken with all that stuff, macerated, then poured back out, topped with sand bitter, and garnished with like a this cucumber is, on a split.
This is wild. Can you take? I would think the Peychauds would just overpower it's like, everything.
So, I mean, Kirk and Max and all those guys were part of like the Rogue or
that's
then
right.
became Beta Cocktails
that's right.
movement.
My
so
brother,
these were all like cocktails that were just like atypical.
Yeah, My brother takes a little credit for that drink.
Oh, really?
My brother was a original bar back at the Violet Hour.
Oh, nice.
In history, according to that.
But that drink was like a cure drink, wasn't it?
Sure, but you know, before that.
Yeah, he was working on that drink at Violet Hour.
My brother always claims to have made Michael Rubel make him. He's like, what if I had a drink that was just 2 ounces of Angostura? So it's like an Angostura bitters drink. Supposedly, that's my brother's. My brother's always like, but he was historically the worst barback in the history of barbackery.
That's awesome.
All right, here's our cameo question from Instagram from YBC, spelled out WHYBEESEA. What's something that customers do that annoys you?
That customers do?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, we're in this like new working through service charge.
Yeah.
World, you know, that's kind of where we are as well as a company. We've been putting a service charge on tickets so that we can help equitably pay everyone back of house, front of house. And then just the arguments that come with that, while I know it's not their responsibility to understand, you know, we're all trying to be better for everybody here. And it's just sometimes some people just fail to. Yeah. Give it a shot.
I think that people default to like, oh, they're just trying to make a bunch more money.
Yeah, and it's like, look, man, we're all boned here.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to do something genuinely good.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to, you know, whether it's have insurance or make sure that the guy in the kitchen is no longer making
a fraction.
Yeah. And you know, it's been a lot of pushback for that, and they'll ding the whole restaurant experience because of that.
Yeah,
that
sucks.
They'll ding, and they'll go out and be verbal on things that, you know, people care about. And, oh, one-star review, this place is, you know, a bunch of socialists. And
it's like,
oh, okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Come again.
Every time I read a one-star review, you have to read the one-star review, because a lot of stuff, you just dismiss it. You know, you can't look at the stars. I mean, don't just look at the stars. And when you do see a one-star, a lot of times it's like, that's just like something very specific that happened. One time it's like, I went there and they were closed. One star. It's like, go fuck yourself, man.
Yeah. But, you know, you got to be open for when you're supposed to be open. I have learned that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Favorite band or musician?
Oi. Pass. No. I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one.
What'd
it's
always to on your
it's
way
oh,
over
it's
here.
Easy one is would be Depeche Mode. I like Depeche Mode.
That's a good
pretty
one.
Sweet band.
Nice. Favorite movie?
All right. Yeah, probably one of the Batmans. I like I'm really big Christopher Nolan fan.
All right, so the new Batmans. I mean the not
what's
new-ish.
The best of his trilogy? First one,
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
Oh, Dark Knight. That's the first one.
Oh,
right?
Dark Knight Rises, you're saying?
No, Dark Knight. Yeah, Dark Knight. Yeah.
Chicago movie.
Yeah. Chicago. Gotham. That's why I think
Dark
that's
Knight's
one of the parts
so
that I love.
It is really good.
About like the scenes. I'm like, oh, I know that spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Lower Wacker.
Yeah, like, I know Lower Wacker.
I made a pencil disappear in that guy's nose over there.
Danny, gross. And our last question. If you weren't doing this, what would you be doing?
I had to think about that a lot during the pandemic. I think at one point I was wanted to go be a fish, just go further down south and work on boats and, you know, clean fish and stuff like that. I love breaking out fish.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And there's like, it's just not that much further, but that was the thing that kept coming back. You know, when we were all kind of in a really bad situation
the panic
there.
Mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what can I do? What can I do? What am I going to do? I'll go cut fish.
Cut fish.
I'll work on a boat. I'll go cut fish. But I couldn't get back that smell though, you know?
Yeah.
That's a hard
one.
That's
linger.
A tough guy.
Yeah. Come home where you can like fish. All right. Well, that was the last question. Thanks
that's
for
great.
Joining us.
Thanks
today.
For having me.
Yeah. Thanks.
Right
out.
To the airport now.
Yeah.
Let's see if Zaragoza is supposed to pick me up. Let's
see. And that concludes our conversation with Alfredo Nogueira. Thanks for listening. And remember, check us out on social media. There's extra stuff there. We're asking questions.
So much cool stuff.
You get your question answered by an industry professional on Joiner's Podcast. What honor is higher than that? Other than maybe a 3 Michelin star designation. Anything to add, Danny?
No, not much.
Well, this episode was produced by Matt Haddock. Our music was done by Captain Cuts. And of course, you know our real work is always done by the one and only Joe Guzzo III. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.